Tonight we're going to go back and look at marriages in a little more detail. A while ago, actually I think it was almost 12 years ago, I found a statement in a newspaper article, and it really stood out. It mentioned that even though the number of marriages ending in divorce had stabilized after many years of rapid rise, the rate of people entering marriage had drastically declined. In other words, one of the reasons why the divorce rate was not continuing to rise was because there were fewer marriages to be broken. And that got me interested. I started researching it and started finding out various pieces of information about it. For instance, one of the information that came up was the percentage of persons age 15 and older, that's being very generous, who were married. And in 1960, you had close to 70%, 65% females, 70% males being married. And as you go through the years, I don't know how well you can see the numbers all the way back there, but as you go through the years, it's declining. It's a very steady decline. By the time you get to 2000, it's 59.9 or 57.9% for males and 54% for females. And by 2 years ago, which is the closest I could get in the current statistics, it's down to 53.7 and 50.6 for females. In other words, just a little over half the population is now married. Almost half the population no longer is married. That's quite a bit of decline in just 50 years. Not only that, but another statistic is the number of marriages per thousand, in other words, a rate of unmarried women. This one just looked at women age 15 and older. And here the rate of marriages was again, it went from 73 in 2009, 73 and a half in 1960, and by the time you get down to 2009, it's all the way down to 36.5%. The number of marriages per woman, the number of marriages is dropping almost in half in 50 years. What's interesting is that you look at another statistic that says, okay, what is the percentage of married persons aged 18 and older who say their marriages were very happy? And what's interesting is there is also a decline, though it's not nearly as drastic or nearly as much. It's kind of stabilizing as you get in more recent years. But it started out nearly 70% for males, 66% for females. And by the time you get to 2008, which is the most recent, it's down to 63% and about 60% for females. So while the number of marriages is getting fewer and fewer, the number of people who are happy in their marriage is also slowly but not completely declining as well. So the question comes up, why are marriages declining? And there's a number of reasons that people have looked at and I've dug through it both with what people have suggested as well as what the scriptures say. And some of the things I've come up with is, well, one of the things is marriage is no longer a rite of passage. It used to be that that's what people, when they were young, said, okay, when I get to be older, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to get married. That was what it meant to become an adult. And it's not seen that way anymore. In Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24, Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24, passage we read this morning. It says, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. For thousands of years, this is what most people did. People, children grew up, they left home, and they established new families. It was almost a given. Today, children grow up, but they remain single for many years. Marriage is seen as something that's nice, but no longer is seen as something necessary. Instead of leaving home for a married life, people oftentimes, if they do leave, leave to establish independence. And marriage is put off, sometimes permanently put off. And for that matter, marriages, another reason we have less marriages is marriages are being postponed. In Proverbs chapter 5, starting with verse 19, there's a passage that encourages people to live joyfully with their husband and wives. Proverbs 5, and verse 19. Excuse me. As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love. Why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? Why should someone seek out sex outside of marriage? One should enjoy the company of their own spouse. And the youth are not marrying much these days. The average age to marry, that's another interesting statistic. Back in 1960, the average age to marry is 23 for a male and 20 for a female. That's fairly steady. If you go back into the 1800s, it's roughly about the same. You know, we talk about sometimes I married so early in the 1800s and in earlier years. Actually, no. Because most males didn't get married until they could support a family, and it took until about 21 to 23, somewhere out there, to get a steady enough job that you could actually support family. And so that those ages are fairly steady. But look at, by the time you get to 2009, it's risen up to 28 and 26 for male and female. Since people die at any age, the higher the age, then the lower the number of people possible to marry. The longer marriage is postponed, also the more likely alternative arrangements, such as cohabitation, is sought out. In other words, the desire for a partner is still there, but is not being found first in marriage. The longer a person cohabitates, lives with somebody without being married, the less likely they'll make a commitment to marry also. And because they become used to living with others without a commitment, the idea of committing to another person in marriage becomes less desirable. One of the things I've noticed in the questions I get all the time, you constantly run across people who don't want to make a commitment. They don't want to bind themselves to one person. Yet they still want all the benefits that come with marriage. The problem is cohabitation rarely ever lasts. Most people who live with someone jump from partner to partner. They share intimate sex, but not the understanding that sex binds people together. Take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians 6 and in verse 16. It says, or do you not know that the one who joins himself to a prostitute is one body with her? For he says the two shall become one flesh. The problem he's saying with prostitution is because it binds two people together. And here, this case is referring to sexual union. They make and break relationships so often They no longer know how to make a permanent commitment to someone. What you find is happening is that a lot of people would solve problems by leaving. You don't get along with your current girlfriend or your current boyfriend, well, just leave the house. Stick them with the rent and you go off to someplace else. No one learns how to solve problems. They just run from them. So what happens if they ever do decide to get married? First time you get a problem, they run. In fact, most people see that and they say, well, I'm not even going to bother getting married because I know I'm going to run. And that's what we have in society today. Along with that, marriage is no longer linked to the sexual relationship. As we read in Genesis 2 and verse 24, the two shall become one flesh. We talked about this morning. That's talking about a covenant relationship. It also is talking about a sexual relationship as well. In Hebrews chapter 13 and in verse 4, Hebrews chapter 13 and in verse 4, it says, marriage is to be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers God will judge. Sex belongs only within marriage. That's what God's rule is. There's a reason for it. Intercourse is honorable within a marriage. Outside of it, it's called fornication. It's called adultery. It's a sin. Yet today, sex outside of marriage is expected in our society. What was once a shocking revelation in my grandfather's day is now considered normal. I'm amazed how often I have to explain to young couples why sex outside of marriage is wrong. It used to be a given. But I have to now explain why. And they don't understand the reasons when they're shown it. They just never thought about it. It never occurred to them to question it. Because our society does not teach that anymore. Sex is seen as an independent action, not associated with marriage at all. In fact, one of the interesting statistics, again, this is one of the few ones that I've seen actually improve since I've put this lesson together. 20% of ninth graders have had sexual intercourse. Think about it. Just entering high school, 20% have had intercourse. That's actually down. 2003 was 33%. And that's actually down. In the 1990s, it was higher. I don't have the exact numbers. 53% of 12th graders have had intercourse. Just over half in 2007. Again, that's down. It was 62% in 2003. And when I put this one together originally, which was 1999, it was 75%. So it's actually going down, which is one of the rare good things that I could find in this thing. But it's still way too high. No, and this doesn't include other sexual acts. This is only intercourse. See, virginity is the exception and not the rule anymore. Paul urged those who desire to have sex to get married. Take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 7. 1 Corinthians 7, starting with verse 8. But I say to the unmarried and to widows that it is good for them if they remain even as I. But if they do not have self-control, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion. That's not practiced today by any way, shape, or form or means. And it used to be, like I said, something given. And so marriage is not sought because people think you can have sex without marriage. Along with that, living together is no longer viewed as a sin either. I've teased a long time ago, about 15 years ago, the Episcopal Church, in their voting, decided to vote that living together is no longer to be called a sin. That's the way our society looks things. It's not called a sin in denominations. It's not, or at least at the minimum, even if they view it as a sin, they don't talk about it for fear of alienating their population because so many people are doing it. So they won't mention it because they don't want to drive off their membership. So many people compromise their beliefs in order to keep people coming into the doors. Take a look at Galatians chapter 4. Galatians chapter 4, and starting with verse 16. Galatians chapter 4, 16. So have I become your enemy by telling you the truth? They eagerly seek you, not commendably, but they wish... excuse me. But they wished to shut you out so that you will seek them. There are a lot of people that don't seek the truth. They don't stand up for the truth. Excuse me. Maybe I'll get over this cold. So they compromise because they want numbers. They're interested in bodies coming in, not for people living with what is true. People want to be told that they're fine just the way they are. And they get upset. And people put their foot down and say, no, it's not the way it ought to be or is. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, 2 Timothy chapter 4, starting with verse 3, it says, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled, they'll accumulate for themselves teachers in accordance with their own desires, and will turn away their ears from the truth, and will turn aside to myths. Living together has increased drastically. I'm always amazed, because last time I did this, it had gone up 1,000%. In 1960, the number of millions, there was about 439,000 people who live together. By 1970, it's gone up to 500,000. It's up over 1 million. 1.5 million by 1980 is 2.8 million. By 1990 is 3.8 million. By 2000, it is now 6.6 million in 2009. If you see that dollar curve, it's going very rapidly up. And based on that, then it's 1,517% increase in just 50 years. Telling people that their living arrangement is sinful would impact a large part of the population. And that's why it stopped being talked about. The reason why is, by the way, 1960 is picked because it was shortly after 1960 when they basically stopped calling fornication socially unacceptable and no longer a crime. And it picks up like you expect to increase. Another problem is also that marriage is no longer seen as a way to pool resources. Feminism in our society makes it necessary for, or tries to make it necessary for women to establish their own careers, their own independent careers. And there's nothing wrong with earning money, but it's affected society in unexpected ways. See, when a woman has her own career, she doesn't desire marriage because then it impacts her career. So marriage is put off until she feels she is established. There's a passage that's interesting that goes along with that. It's in Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and in verse 8. Says, there is a certain man without a dependent, having neither a son nor a brother, yet there is no end to all his labor. Indeed, his eyes are not satisfied with riches, and he never asks, and for what am I laboring and depriving myself of pleasure? This too is vanity, and is a grievous task. What Solomon is pointing out is that when people don't have dependents and they're working, work tends to consume them. It's very easy to fall into that pattern, where everything is work because you have nothing else to do. That also then contributes to the decline of marriage, because no one's seeking out anybody else. They live for their work. I spend time counseling couples, and one of the things I talk to them about is that they shouldn't have separate bank accounts. You may be amazed how many people think that's a radical idea. What do you mean? Have the same, her money and my money mixed together? And the very question shows a problem. Because the two are supposed to become one. There isn't a her money and my money. It's our money. When people think about his money and her money, they don't think of a union, but as two separate people who just happen to live in the same house. Even little things, as who's going to pay the electric bill, then becomes a point of argument and a wedge between couples. But there are other shared resources as well. And again, in Ecclesiastes, this time chapter 4, verse 9, it says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? And if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. What happens if one becomes ill? Even family ties and friends are a pool of shared resources. But people don't look at that as something you get with marriage anymore. Our society pushes for independent individualism. People marry, but they don't pool their resources. Instead of benefiting from sharing, they behave as if they have a roommate that they're splitting rent with. Marriage, again, is then just seen as a glorified living arrangement for two separate people. And if you understand that, then you see why society is going towards the civil unions and arguing, well, there's no reason why two homosexuals can't get married, quote. Because people don't see it like marriage anymore. So marriage basically is seen only as something that brings personal happiness. No other reason for marriage is seen or sought. It makes marriage to be no more than glorified cohabitation. See, until recently, people did not marry just because they loved someone. Here you go, there's a radical idea again either, too. Love was often there, but it wasn't always the exclusive reason for getting married. Love was seen as the icing on the cake. Sometimes people got married first and then learned to love each other afterwards, amazingly enough. Strange concept? Couldn't ever happen? Take a look at Isaac and Rebekah in Genesis chapter 34 or 24. Genesis 24 and verse 37. Genesis 24 verse 37. So my master made me swear saying, you shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites in whose land I live, but you shall go to my father's house and to my relatives and take a wife for my son. How much input did Isaac have in the arrangements made for his bride? The answer is none. His father sent a servant to another country to pick out a wife for his son. In the same chapter, down in verse 50, it says, and Laban and Bethuel replied, the matter comes before the Lord, so we cannot speak to you good or bad. Here is Rebekah before you. Take her and go, and let her be the wife of your master's son, as the Lord has spoken. How much input did Rachel have? The answer is not much. She was asked, do you want to go now or go later? But it was basically assumed she was going to go. And then you get down to verse 64, when they first meet, Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from the camel. She said to the servant, who is that man walking in the field to meet us? The servant said, he is my master. Then she took her veil and covered herself. The servant told Isaac all the things that he had done, and Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent. And he took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. Thus Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. He met her, they got married, and he fell in love with her afterwards. It's not something that's impossible. And if you read back in the stories from the older days, it wasn't that unusual. Most people married for love. But it wasn't all that unusual to marry. To read about people who married because of situations where this was more viable. This was a good arrangement. This was sensible. And love came afterwards. There are other reasons to get married. There's religious reasons. For instance, that sex is only supposed to belong in marriage, so therefore there's a religious reason to get married. There are social reasons to get married. Children, even today, we still admit, children are best raised by a stable two-parent family. And in Psalms 128, starting with verse 1, how blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. When you eat of the fruit of your hands, you will be happy, and it will be well with you. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house, your children like olive plants around your table. Behold, for thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. It used to be that marriage gave a person social advantages. If you were going to get a job, more people would hire somebody who was married because they say, hey, he's stable. He's going to be around because he has to support a family. He's going to work harder at the job than a single person who can say, well, this is not working up, I can up and leave. There are economic reasons, shared finances, shared support of families and friends. One time, children were an economic necessity. In Psalms 127, go back to verse 3. Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. How blessed is a man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate. Family used to be very important. When you raised a family on a farm, you needed the extra hands. Nowadays, basically, children are just seen as options. We talk about getting up in retirement nest egg. But it used to be once children were the ones who expected to support their parents in their old age. It was a part of honoring your father and your mother. Now children are just seen as an economic burden. which also explains why abortion is so much higher. It used to be easier to get loans, get health insurance, get advances when you were married. Even if love died out in the marriage, people still stuck it out because of all the other reasons there were to being married. However, as we've seen, the advantages of being married are being removed from our society. And people no longer see it as an advantage. Marriage is seen only as a way to make me happy. People enter marriage for selfish reasons. And when they're not happy, they leave. So why marry? It's a whole lot easier to leave if there's no commitment. Marriage was established by God for mankind. While not everyone will marry, or even desire to be married, it was expected to be the usual state for adult men and women. The reason for marriage still exists. What's happening in our society is we're using inferior substitutes for what actually marriage is. The problem is the cheap substitutes have been around so long and becoming so common that people prefer them over the real thing. Why? I can tell you, I just look at my kids. I grew up on whole milk. They love skim milk. They can't stand whole milk. I'll tolerate the skim milk, but I still like the whole milk. But then I can't complain. It took me a long while to learn how to that I really like real butter instead of margarine, because I grew up on the cheap substitute. What you're used to, you accept and think that's the way it ought to be. And that's what people are doing with marriage. They're accepting the cheap substitute, and it's because it's always been that way, it's always been around that way. You mean there's something better? Can't be. We as Christians, though, are to be examples to the world. In Matthew chapter 5, starting with verse 14. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. We have shown that the world, or what we need to do is show the world that God's ways not only work, but are superior to any scheme of man. It ought to be that people notice, for instance, hey, you know those Christians, they tend to marry and they tend to live in marriage a long time. That's the way it ought to be. Not just speech. Not just by what we claim, but what we actually do, how we actually live. We ought to see marriage as being something sacred, something that's honorable, something that is, brings happiness and pleasure to a person's life. Our society is falling apart. And not one of us can put it back together. But if each of us make a small improvement in the lives of those we know, as well as in our own lives, it's going to spread. One of the things I find fascinating is I talk with people, is how many people have actually talked out of living together. I would have thought that would be near impossible. There are people that are actually interested in having somebody that's actually committed to them. They're starting to see that this is cheap as far as living together. sex without love. They're seeing that there's something better out there and they want it. Each individual person that we can convince by our lives, by our actions, by our teachings, it will spread. I hope you'll think about those things. I'd like to offer an opportunity again, as we, even though we haven't talked about salvation, we have to understand that we are the world's lights. And as Christians, we need to be following God's commands. These aren't optional things, suggestions. God tells us what works. There's an opportunity tonight that if there's anyone here who wishes to become a child of God, living by what God has taught, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. If there's anyone here who is a child of God, like the prayers of the brethren on the behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song this way?